celebrate the 116th anniversary of the birth of Sherlock Holmes, an anniversary that took place earlier this year. The Priory Scholars of Fordham, a Scion Society of the Baker Street Irregulars, presents a special dramatic anthology, From Baker Street with Love, Spies and Sherlock Holmes. To introduce the tales of Sherlockian espionage ahead, here now is Dr. John H. Watson.
Thank you and good evening. Tonight, two stories in the canon about how Holmes came to grip with enemy agents. We'll begin with what I call the adventure of the second stain, followed by the adventure of the Bruce Partington clans. Well, these real occurrences happened in the years before the turn of the century, when a lady called Victoria sat on the British throne. So one might truly say that in both these cases, Sherlock Holmes was on Her Majesty's Secret Service. I'd intended to put an end to these exploits of my friend Mr. Sherlock Holmes, not due to any lack of material, since I've notes of many hundreds of cases to which I've never alluded, nor to any waning interest on the part of my readers to the singular personality and undue methods of this remarkable man. The real reason lay in the reluctance which Mr. Holmes has shown in the continued publications of his experiences. It was only when I reminded him that he had promised that The Adventure of the Second Stain would be published when the time was ripe, and pointed out to him that this was the most important international case which he had ever been called upon to handle, that I at last succeeded in obtaining his consent to a carefully guarded account of the incident. So if I appear to be somewhat vague in certain details, there is an excellent reason for my reticence. It was then in a year, and even a decade that shall be nameless, that upon one Tuesday morning in autumn we found two visitors of European fame within the walls of our Baker Street rooms. Lord Bellinger was austere, high-nosed, eagle-eyed, dominant. He had been twice Premier of Britain. The other visitor was dark, clear-cut, elegant, hardly yet of middle age, and endowed with every beauty of body and mind. He was the Right Honorable Trelawney Hope, Secretary for European Affairs, and the most rising statesman in the country. It was easy to see from their worn and anxious faces that it was business of the most pressing importance which had brought them.
When I discovered my loss, Mr. Holmes, which was at 8 o'clock this morning, I at once informed the Prime Minister. It was at his suggestion that we have both come to you.
Have you informed the police?
No, sir. We have not done so, nor is it possible that we should do so. To inform the police must, in the long run, mean informing the public. This is what we particularly desire to avoid.
And why, sir?
Because the document in question is of such immense importance that its publication might very easily, I might almost say probably, lead to European complications of the utmost moment. It is not too much to say that peace or war may hang upon the issue. Unless its recovery can be done in the utmost secrecy, then it might as well not be recovered at all, for all that is aimed by those who have taken it is that its contents should be generally known.
I see. Now, Mr. Trelawney Hope, tell me exactly the circumstances under which the document disappeared.
That can be done in a very few words, Mr. Holmes. The letter, for it was a letter from a foreign potentate, was received 6 days ago. It was of such importance that I have never left it in my safe, but I have taken it across each evening to my house in Whitehall Terrace and kept it in my bedroom in a locked dispatch box. It was there last night. Of that I am certain. I actually opened the box while I was dressing for dinner and saw the letter inside. This morning it was gone. The dispatch box was on my dressing table all night. I am a light sleeper, and so is my wife. We are both prepared to swear that no one entered the room during the night, and yet the paper is gone.
What time did you dine?
7:30.
How long was it before you went to bed?
My wife had gone to the theater. I waited up for her, and it was 11:30 before we went upstairs.
Then for 4 hours, the dispatch box was unguarded,
But no one is ever permitted to enter that room, except the housemaid in the morning, and my valet or my wife's maid during the rest of the day. They are both trusty servants who have been with us for some time. Besides, neither of them could possibly have known that there was anything more valuable than the ordinary departmental papers in my dispatch box.
Who did know of the existence of that letter?
No one. No one in the house.
Surely your wife knew?
No, sir. I never breathed one word to my wife on this matter until I missed the paper this morning.
Could she have guessed?
No, Mr. Holmes, she could not have guessed. Nor could anyone have guessed.
Have you lost any documents before?
No, sir, never.
Who in England knew of the existence of this letter?
Each member of the cabinet was informed yesterday, but the pledge of secrecy of every cabinet meeting was underscored by the solemn warning which was given by the Prime Minister. Good heavens, to think that within a few hours I should myself have lost it. Besides, the members of the cabinet, there are two or possibly three departmental officials who know of the letter. No one else in England, Mr. Holmes, I assure you.
But abroad?
I believe that no one abroad has seen it save the man who wrote it.
What was the letter?
Mr. Holmes, the envelope is a long, thin one of pale blue color. There's a seal of red wax stamped with a crouching lion.
And inside?
That is a state secret of the utmost importance. I fear I cannot tell you.
Indeed. Well, then you are two of the most busy men in the country. And in my own small way, I too am busy. I regret exceedingly that I cannot help you in this matter. Good day.
My dear sir, I am not accustomed to, Well, we must accept your terms, Mr. Holmes, and rely upon your honor and upon your patriotism.
You may safely trust us.
The letter was from a certain foreign potentate. It was written hurriedly and somewhat in anger. Certain of the phrases in the letter are so provocative in character that its publication would undoubtedly lead to a most dangerous state of feeling in this country. There would be such a ferment, sir, that within a week we would be involved in a great war.
But to whose interest is it that the letter should come out? Why should anybody desire to steal it or publish it?
There, Mr. Holmes, you take me into regions of high international position and politics. The whole of Europe is an armed camp. There's a balance of powers. But Great Britain holds the scales. Should Great Britain go to war with one set of powers, it would assure the supremacy of the other set of powers, whether they joined in the war or not. Do you follow?
Very clearly. It is then in the interest of the enemies of this potentate to secure and publish this letter, so as to make it a breach between his country and ours.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. An extremely serious crisis.
Oh, my God.
No, no, my dear fellow. There's no precaution which you've neglected. Mr. Holmes, you have all the facts. What course do you recommend?
Do you think, sir, that unless this document is recovered, there will be a war?
I think it very probable.
Then, sir, prepare for war.
That is a hard saying, Mr. Holmes.
Consider the facts. It is inconceivable that the letter was taken after 11:30 last night, as Mr. Hope and his wife were both in the bedroom for that time on. Therefore, it was taken yesterday evening, sometime between 7:30 and 11:30, probably nearer 7:30, since whoever took it evidently knew it was there and would naturally secure it as early as possible. Now, if a document of that importance were taken at that hour, where can it be now? No doubt passed rapidly on to those who need it. What chance have we now to overtake it or even to trace it?
What you say is perfectly logical, Mr. Holmes. I feel the whole matter beyond our reach.
Let us presume, for argument's sake, that the document was taken by the maid or the valet.
Impossible. They're both old and trustworthy servants.
But you said the room was upstairs, and no one could go up unobserved. It must be then that somebody in the house who has taken the letter. Now, to whom would the thief take it? To one of several spies and secret agents whose name are tolerably familiar to me. There are three who may be said to be the heads of their profession. I will begin my research by going round and finding if each of them is at his post. If one is missing, we'll have some indication as to where the document has gone.
When our illustrious visitors had departed, Holmes lit his pipe in silence, lost in the deepest thought. I had opened the morning paper when suddenly my friend jumped to his feet.
Yes, Watson. The situation is desperate, but not hopeless. Even now, if we could be sure which of them has taken it. It is just possible it's not yet passed out of his hands. After all, it is a question of money with these fellows. If it is on the market, perhaps we can make a bid. There are only three agents capable of playing so bold a game. Oberstein, Lerothier, and Eduardo Lucas. I will see each of them.
It is Eduardo Lucas of Godolphin Street?
Yes, why?
Well, you won't see him.
No? Why not?
He was murdered in this house last night. I was reading about it in the paper. Here, see? Murder in Westminster.
You astonish me, Watson. Let me see quickly. Small, elegant mansion. Almost in the shadow of the Houses of Parliament. Inhabited by Mr. Eduardo Lucas, 34, unmarried. Well known in society circles. But for his charming personality and for being one of the best amateur tenors in the country. At 12:45, a police constable saw the house door ajar. Found the room in a state of wild disorder. The furniture all swept to one side. One chair lying on its back in the center, which Lucas was holding with his legs. Stabbed to the heart with a curved Indian dagger, which had been taken from an Oriental trophy hanging on the wall. He must have died instantly. Robbery does not appear to have been the motive. Watson, what do you make of it?
Well, it's certainly an amazing coincidence.
A coincidence? Here is one of the three men named as possible actors in the drama that meets in a violent death during the very hours which we know the drama was being enacted. The odds are enormous against its being coincidence. No, my dear fellow, the two events are connected, must be connected. It is for us to find the link.
But Holmes, by now, with this murder, the official police must know everything.
Not at all. They know Godolphin Street. But they know nothing of the missing letter at Whitehall Terrace. Only we know of both events, Watson. And notice, Godolphin Street in Westminster is only a few minutes' walk from the Whitehall Terrace. The other secret agents, whom I have named, live in the extreme eastern end, much farther away, a very interesting point. Well, what have we here? Yes, Mrs. Hudson, what is it?
You have a visitor, Mr. Holmes, a lady. She sent up her card.
Thank you.
Yes.
Ask Lady Hildred Trelawney Hope if she will be kind enough to step up.
Yes, sir.
Lady Trelawney Hope, the wife of the Secretary of European Affairs.
Go ahead, Watson. Ah, oh, yes, your ladyship. Do come in. I am Sherlock Holmes. This is my associate, Dr. Watson.
Mr. Holmes? Mr. Holmes, has my husband been here?
Yes, madam, he has.
I feared as much. Mr. Holmes, I will speak frankly to you in the hope that it may induce you to speak frankly in return. There is complete confidence between my husband and me on all matters save one, politics. On this, his lips are sealed. He tells me nothing. Now, I am aware that something happened in our house last night. I know that a paper has disappeared. But because the matter is political, my husband refuses to take me into his complete confidence. Now, it's essential, I say, that I know what happened. Please, Mr. Holmes, what was in this paper which was stolen?
Madam, what you ask me is really impossible.
Oh, my God.
You must see that this is so, madam. I am pledged to secrecy. It is your husband whom you must ask.
I have asked him. I come to you as a last resort. Tell me, Mr. Holmes, is my husband's political career likely to suffer through this incident?
It certainly may have an unfortunate effect.
One more question. From what my husband first hinted when he discovered the disaster, I understand that terrible public consequences might arise from the loss of this document.
If he said so, I certainly cannot deny it.
Of what nature are these consequences?
There again, madam, you ask me more than I can answer.
Very well, Mr. Holmes. I cannot blame you. I'll take up no more of your time. Thank you. And please, I beg you, say nothing of this visit to my husband. Goodbye.
Well, I say, she's gone. Just like that.
Now, Watson, the fair sex is your department. What was the lady's game? What did she really want?
Surely her statement is clear, and her anxiety very natural.
Indeed. Think of her appearance, Watson, her manner, her suppressed excitement. Why did she so earnestly assure us that it was best for her husband that she should know all? And you must have observed how she maneuvered to have the light at her back. She did not wish us to read her expression.
Yes, you're right.
And yet the motives of women are so inscrutable. The most trivial action may mean volumes, or the most extraordinary conduct may depend upon a hairpin. How can you build on such quicksand? Well, I must be off, Watson.
Where are you going?
To Godolphin Street, for a start. With Eduardo Lucas, I'm certain lies the solution of our problem. Though it is a capital offense to theorize in advance upon the facts. Stay on guard, Watson. I may join you for lunch.
All that day and the next, Holmes was in a morose mood. He ran out and ran in, smoked incessantly, played snatches on his violin, sank into reveries, and hardly answered when I spoke. It was evident things were not going well. As for the death of Eduardo Lucas, the coroner's jury brought in a verdict of willful murder, but by parties unknown. Lucas's valet, a John Mitten, had been arrested, but no case could be sustained against him. He had been on good terms with his master, although it was pointed out that Lucas did not take his valet with him to Paris, and Lucas sometimes went to Paris for months at a time. Then, on the fourth day, a startling discovery was telegraphed by the Paris police. A woman named Madame Henri Fournet, living in a small villa in the Rue Austerlitz, was reported to the authorities as being insane, or breaking down completely mentally. It developed that the police learned that she had just returned from a journey to London, and there was evidence to place her on Godolphin Street. A comparison of photographs proved that Eduardo Lucas and Henri Fournet were really one and the same person, that Lucas, for some reason, lived a double life in London and Paris. Madame Fournet, who is of Creole origin, is extremely excitable and has suffered in the past from attacks of jealousy, which have amounted to frenzy.
It is conjectured, Watson, that during one of these fits, she came to London and killed her husband. She was seen in Charing Cross Station the next morning, wild-eyed and violent. And there is evidence that a woman who might have been Madame Fournet has seen for some hours on Godolphin Street watching Lucas's house.
Well, that solves our mystery, then.
My dear Watson, the death of Lucas is a mere incident, a trivial episode compared with our real task, which is to trace that document and save a European catastrophe. Only one important thing has been happened in the last 3 days, and that is that nothing has happened. Nowhere in Europe is there any sign of trouble. Now, if the letter were loose... No. Oh, it can't be loose. But then where is it? Who has it? Why has it been laid back, Watson? The interests at stake are colossal. Should I bring this case to a successful conclusion, it would certainly represent the crowning glory of my career. Hello, here's news. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
Please run and brought you this note, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you. Look here, Watson. Mm-hmm. From Inspector Lestrade. He seems to have observed something of interest. Once it's down in Godolphin Street at the source of the crime. Grab your coat, Watson. Let's be off.
It was my first visit to the death room of Eduardo Lucas, an apartment luxurious almost to the verge of effeminacy. There was no longer any sign of the crime, save for an ugly, irregular stain on the small carpet which lay in the center of a highly polished old wood floor. Inspector Lestrade met us.
Glad to see you, Mr. Holmes. You too, Doctor. Seen the Paris news?
Yes, indeed.
Our French friends seem to have hit the mark this time. No doubt it's just as they say. Surprise visit. He lets her in. They quarrel. And she snatched that handy dagger off the wall. It wasn't all done in an instant, though, for those chairs were all swept over. He was found holding one of them as if to protect himself. Oh, we've got it all as clear as if we'd seen it.
And yet you said for me.
Well, that's another matter. A mere trifle. But the sort of thing you take an interest in. Queer, sort of freakish.
What is it?
Well, you know, after a crime of this sort, we're very careful to keep everything in place. Nothing has been moved. Officer in charge here day and night. But look at this carpet. We've discovered something odd by accident.
What, man? What?
You'll never guess in 100 years. Do you see that stain? It's a big one. It surely must have soaked through, don't you think?
Undoubtedly.
Well, it might surprise you to learn that there's no stain on the woodwork underneath. None at all.
But that's impossible.
The fact remains, there's no stain. There is a second stain, however, but it's here, under another section of the carpet. What do you think of that?
That's simple enough. The two stains were once over each other, naturally, but the carpet was turned around.
I guess that, Mr. Holmes, myself. What I want to know is why the carpet was turned, and who did it?
Look here, Lestrade. Has the same constable been in charge of the place all the time? The constable that's standing guard in the passageway now?
Yes, he has.
Well, take my advice. Examine him carefully, but don't do it in front of us. We'll wait here. You take him into the back room. You'll be more likely to get a confession out of him alone. Ask him how he dared admit people and leave them alone in this room. Don't ask him if he's done it. Take it for granted. Bully him. Tell him that a full confession is his only chance. Now do exactly as I say.
By George, if he knows, I'll have it out of him. Thanks for your advice, Mr. Holmes. Constable McPherson, I want a word with you.
Now, Watson, quick. Quick, get this carpet out of the way.
Now, what are you doing, Holmes?
So, someone moved the carpet, eh? Obviously, to get something underneath. What's underneath, Watson?
Just the floor. A highly polished wooden floor.
Highly polished, but with a few tiny nicks here. Especially around that wood board there. Insert a penknife. See how nicely the board lifts out. Just like the lid of a box, eh?
A hiding place. What's down there, Holmes?
What's down here?
Nothing.
Damn it, nothing. It's empty. And I believe I hear Lestrade returning. Quick, Watson, quick, get the carpet. That's it. Drink it right over here. Good, good.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Holmes. I can see you're very bored. He's confessed, though. You were right. Come in here, McPherson, and let these gentlemen hear about your inexcusable conduct.
I meant no harm, sir, really not. The young woman came up to the door last night, mistook the house, she said. We got to talking. It's lonesome when you're here on duty all day.
What happened then?
She wanted to see where the crime was done, and read about it in the papers, she said. She was a respectable, well-spoken young lady, and I saw no harm in letting her have a peep. But when she saw that stain on the carpet, she fainted right on the floor. I went round to the corner local for some brandy. By the time I brought it back to the young woman, she'd recovered and was off. Ashamed of herself, I dare say.
Well, it's good that you confessed, Constable McPherson. It's a lesson to you that you can't deceive me. It's lucky for you that nothing is missing, or you'd find yourself on Queer Street.
Has this woman only been here once, Constable?
Yes, sir, only once.
Who was she?
Don't know the name, sir. She was answering an advertisement about typewriting and came to the wrong number. Very pleasant, genteel young woman, sir.
Tall? Handsome?
You might say so. Pretty. Very coaxing ways, you might say.
Thank you, Constable. And thank you, Lestrade. Well, we must be going now. Come, Watson. I think we have important work elsewhere.
Honey, Holmes. Goodbye, Lestrade.
Goodbye, Doctor. You too, Mr. Holmes. Thanks for coming down for such a petty business.
Now, Watson, the curtain rings up for the last act. You will be relieved to hear that there will be no war. that Right Honorable Trelawney Hope will suffer no setback in his brilliant career, that the indiscreet foreign sovereign will not receive punishment for his letter, that the Prime Minister will have no European complication to deal with, and with a little tact and management upon our part, nobody will be a penny the worse for what might have been a very ugly incident.
How astonishing, you solved it.
I'll be that, Watson. There are some points which are as dark as ever, but we have so much that it will be our own fault if we cannot get the rest. We will go straight to Whitehall Terrace and bring the matter to a head.
Mr. Owens, surely this is most unfair on your part. You promised to keep my visit to you a secret, and yet you compromised me by coming here to my home.
Unfortunately, madam, I had no possible alternative. I have been commissioned to recover an immensely important letter. I must therefore ask you, madam, to be kind enough to place it in my hands.
My dear sir, you insult me, Mr. Holmes.
Come, come, it is useless. Give up the letter. If you work with me, all will be set right. If you work against me, I must expose you.
You are trying to frighten me. It is not a manly thing, Mr. Holmes, to come here and browbeat a woman. What are you trying to say? I give you 5 minutes.
What is enough, Lady Hilda? I know of your visit to Eduardo Lucas, of your giving him this document, of your ingenious return to the room last night, and the manner in which you took the letter from its hiding place under the carpet. Come, Lady Hilda, you have the letter. Take my advice and be frank with me. It's your only chance.
I tell you again, Mr. Holmes, you are under some absurd illusion.
I'm sorry for you, Lady Hilda. I understand your husband regularly comes home a quarter of an hour from now. We should wait.
Oh, please, Mr. Holmes, spare me. For heaven's sake, don't tell him. I love him so, and this would break his heart.
Good. I'm glad to see you've recovered your senses. There's not an instant to lose. Where is the letter?
Here. I have it locked in his writing desk. Here it is. Would to heaven I had never seen it.
Now, how can we return it? We must think of some way. Where is the dispatch box?
Still in his bedroom.
What a stroke of luck. How did you open it before? You have a duplicate key? Yeah. Yes, of course you have. Quick, let's go upstairs and return this document to the place from which it disappeared.
An instant later, Holmes was thrusting the paper under some other documents in the dispatch box. Then, under his sharp questioning, Lady Hilda Trelawney Hope began her strange confession.
Mr. Holmes, there is no woman in London who loves her husband as I do. And yet, if he knew, it was a letter of mine, an indiscreet letter written before my marriage, the action of an impulsive girl. I meant no harm, and as the years passed, I thought the matter was forgotten. Then, recently, I heard from the man Lucas that he had gained possession of the letter and would lay it before my husband. I implored his mercy. He said that he would return my letter if I would return to him a certain document in my husband's dispatch box. Put yourself in my position, Mr. Holmes. What was I to do?
Take your husband into your confidence.
I could not, Mr. Holmes. I could not. I have no understanding of politics. I did not think removing the document could have such far-reaching consequences. And I had to have that old letter back, because my husband's own honor stands so high that he could not forget or pardon a lapse in another. So I got the document out of the dispatch box and brought it to Godolphin Street.
What happened there?
I tapped on the door. Lucas opened it. I followed him in. I remembered that there was a woman outside as I entered. I handed Lucas the document and he gave me my letter. Suddenly there was a sound outside. Lucas quickly turned back the carpet, put the document in some hiding place beneath, and covered it over again. What happened after that is like some fearful dream. A wild woman ran in screaming in French. There was a savage struggle and she stabbed him. I rushed from the house. It was the next morning that I realized I had only exchanged one trouble for another. My husband's anguish at the loss of the document cut into my heart. I came to you that morning in order to understand the enormity of my offense. But I soon realized that the document must still be where Lucas had hidden it, somewhere underneath the carpet on which he had been killed. Last night, by tricking the constable on guard, I managed to get the document back. But you know that. Heaven, I hear my husband.
Be calm, Lady Holmes.
Hello, dear. Right. Hello, Mr. Holmes. I did not think to see you here. Any news?
I have some hopes.
Ah, thank heaven. The Prime Minister is lunching with me. Here he comes now. May he share your hopes? He has nerves of steel, and yet I know that he has hardly slept since this terrible event. Hilda, my dear, would you excuse us? I fear this is a matter of politics. We'll join you in a few moments in the dining room.
Yes, of course. A pleasure to have you join us, Lord Bellinger.
Thank you, Lady Holmes. And a surprise to see you, Mr. Holmes. Though I hope that you have something to report.
purely negative as yet. I've inquired at every point where it might be, and I'm sure there's no danger.
But that is not enough, Mr. Holmes. Not enough. We cannot live forever on such a volcano. We must have something definite.
I'm in hopes of getting it. That is why I am here. The more I think of the matter, the more convinced I am that the document has never left this house.
Mr. Holmes.
If it had, it would certainly be public by now.
But who could ever have taken it out of the dispatch box?
I'm not convinced that it ever left the dispatch box.
Mr. Holmes, this joking is extremely ill-timed. You have my assurance that it left the box.
Indeed. Have you examined the box since Tuesday morning?
No, it wasn't necessary.
You may conceivably have overlooked it. Such things do happen. It may have gotten mixed up with other papers.
Impossible. The document was on top.
Someone might have shaken up the box.
I had all the papers out.
Well, such things are easily decided. I took the liberty, sir, of bringing the dispatch box downstairs so that you could open it.
Well, this is a farcical waste of time. But still, if nothing else can satisfy you, I'll do it. Just let me unlock it, and there. Look, ordinary papers. A letter from Lord Merrow, a report from Sir Charles Hardy, a memorandum from Belgrade, a note on the Russo-German grain taxes, a letter from Madrid, a letter from Lord Flowers, a letter from... Good heavens! What's this? Lord Bellinger, look here!
It's the letter! It's the letter! Yes, and quite intact. Oh, I congratulate you.
Thank you, thank you. What a weight from my heart. But this is inconceivable, impossible. Mr. Holmes, you're a wizard, a sorcerer. How did you know it was there?
Because I knew it was nowhere else.
I cannot believe my eyes. This is like a miracle. Where's my wife? I must tell her the good news. Hilda! Hilda!
Come, Mr. Holmes. There's more in this than meets the eye. I'm sure the letter wasn't in there before. How did it get back into the box?
My dear Prime Minister, we also have our diplomatic secrets.
Before returning to the second half of this annual Sherlock Holmes salute, we pause for station identification. Three, Dr. Watson has called The Adventure of the Bruce Partington Plans.
In the third week of November, in the year 1895, a dense yellow fog settled down upon London. From the Monday to the Thursday, I doubt whether it was possible from our windows in Baker Street to see the opposite houses. The first days, Holmes spent his time cross-indexing his huge books of references on old crime. But when the fourth day, by the fourth day, we saw from our breakfast the heavy brown swirl still drifting past us and condensing in oily drops upon the window panes, my comrade's impatient, active nature could endure this drab existence no longer. He paced restlessly about our sitting room in a fever of suppressed energy, biting his nails, tapping on the furniture, chafing against inaction.
Nothing of interest in the paper, Watson. No interest in crimes.
No, Holmes, not that I've found. Just the ordinary, commonplace things.
The London criminal is certainly a dull fellow. Here, Watson, look out this window. See how the figures loom up, are dimly seen, then blend once more into the fog. The thief or the murderer could roam London on such a day as the tiger does in the jungle, unseen until he pounces invisibly to everyone save his victim.
There have been numerous petty thefts.
Oh, Watson, this great and somber stage is set for something more worthy than that. It is fortunate for this community that I am not a criminal.
It is indeed.
It is well that they don't have days of fog in the Latin countries, the countries of assassination. Ah, yes, Mrs. Hudson, have you something there at last to break our dead monotony?
Hilda, I'm just coming, sir.
Oh, thank you, let me see. Well, what next, Watson? My brother Mycroft is coming round.
And why not?
Why not? As if you met a tram car coming down a country lane. Mycroft has his rails, and he runs on them. His Pall Mall Lodging, the Diogenes Club, Whitehall. That's his cycle. What upheaval can possibly have derailed him?
What does the telegram say?
It reads, must see you over Cadogan West. Coming at once, Mycroft. The name Cadogan West means nothing to me, but that Mycroft should break out in this erratic fashion. A planet might as well have left his orbit. By the way, Watson, do you know what Mycroft is?
You told me once that he had some small office under the British government.
You're right in thinking he's under the British government. You'd also be right in a sense if you said that occasionally he is the British government.
My dear Holmes.
I thought I might surprise you. Mycroft draws £450 a year, remains a subordinate, has no ambitions of any kind, will receive neither honor nor title, but remains the most indispensable man in the country.
But how?
Stanley's position is unique. There's never been anything like it before, nor will there be again. He has the tidiest and most orderly brain, with the greatest capacity for storing facts of any man living. The same great powers which I have turned to deduction of crime, he has used for this particular business. The conclusions of every department are passed to him, and he is the central exchange, the clearinghouse, which makes out the balance. All men are specialists, but his specialism is omniscience.